Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Close Up. I'm your host, Joe.
And I'm Justin.
Today, Justin is giving his review of The Gorge. I haven't seen it, so I'll be asking questions to prompt him. He's going to be doing a non-spoiler section first, and then getting into full spoilers. We'll prompt you when that switchover occurs. So, medium shot, what were your expectations going into The Gorge?
I went into it expecting literally nothing. I saw it was new-ish, and had Apple TV for the first time, so I was like, you know what? Let's try an original. Let's see what Apple TV can do for an original and something relatively new. So I went into it. I put it on. I didn't know if I was going to watch it all the way through in one sitting. I ended up watching it all the way through in one sitting because it was actually pretty good. So essentially, The Gorge is two snipers from different countries. Basically, one is American and one is some area of Russia. They both take jobs defending this mysterious gorge. And there's these towers on opposite sides. It's just this really sketchy job that they're just like, yeah, they're recruited by their some sort of government agency to man this post and replace the guy from before.
All right.
So right off the hop, you had a bit of character development before these characters even got to the gorge. You saw a little bit from each one, just so you got a taste of who they were. You know, you've got, I believe it was Draza, had her a little bit of a thing going on with her father in Russia, and she kind of needs to disappear after a job kind of goes wrong. And then you've got Levi, who is on the American side, and he's kind of doing mercenary work when he used to be more military, and he's just looking for something more his speed, a bit more, like, you know, patriotic.
All right.
So then they get thrown into this gorge setup. They've got two opposing towers across this massive gorge. And the way the whole movie was set up was interesting because the explanation of what they were doing at the gorge was presented to Levi by his predecessor. And he's like, you know, here's what you're supposed to be doing. You're supposed to be loading the ammo in these automated turrets. You just got to watch the gorge. Don't make contact with anybody. Stay radio silence. Here's when you got to do your check-ins. Here's all your stuff. Here's this. And good luck. And he's like, well, how did you know all this stuff? And he's like, the guy before me told me. Because it basically kind of fills him in that he's like, yeah. You know, since World War One or something, somebody from each side has manned a position on the gorge. And they go, and this is within like the first probably 5 to 10 minutes of the movie.
All right.
And then he gets on the helicopter to leave, and they shoot him.
Oh.
The informant is, so he the guy he's replacing, he's like, yep, I did my 1 year here. I get to go home now. Well, he dies immediately. By the company that just dropped Levi off.
Wow.
So right away, you know, something really sketchy is going on. But it was a really interesting way of presenting the story and setting up the story. It's not something you see in more modern movies just because they want to be really subtle with how they set things up. This is a like a get to the point movie where it's like, okay, here's the setup. Here's what's going on. Now we'll go into the story we want to tell about this.
A lot of stories waste too much time on their ordinary world act one setup. The inciting incident, by rule of thumb in most screenplays, ought to come within the first minute of a story. And then act one is set up the world before things really get going. But I think a lot of screenplays waste way too much time on that part.
Yeah, and that's something I really appreciated, is that it just, it got to it. It felt more like the way 80s movies kind of did it, where they're like, okay, think Jurassic Park, where it's like, okay, here's our characters. We have a brief bit of our characters, and then
we're in it.
Here's John Hammond or whatever his name was explaining about Jurassic Park.
Basically, if you have a cool pitch for a movie, just get there as soon as possible.
Yeah. So they got to the gorge. It's great. That's the base of the story without going too far into spoilers. I will go a little bit further without spoiling it too much.
Before you go into spoilers, I was just going to say, before you actually get into spoilers, you can probably give your review for anyone who wants to click off for the spoiler part and then just your...
So the film story after that is pretty standard. It's nothing like special or anything. It's probably like what I would usually call a mid-tier garbage. It's good. It's worth watching. It's just not like excellent. The part that I really appreciated about it, though, was all of the filmmaking that went into it. The camera work, the CGI, the look and the clarity of the film itself, and the usage of color grading is phenomenal. Honestly, I think it should be an industry standard going forward, is to try to do this. Like, not do this specifically, but take some advice from this, because it would be an update to what cinema looks like. And this is a very good look.
I suppose cinema has had a different look that's popularized as time goes on. If you look at, that's why we kind of categorize by decades or eras. You kind of see, oh, films from the 70s sort of have this look, films from the 40s have this look, films from the 80s and 90s sort of have a look, films from the 2010s have a look, and maybe this could be the look of the 30s.
Yeah, so this one, especially knowing what I do know about modern cameras, every film we go to see is like, oh, you know, there's film grain on it. They try not to make it so sharp and clear looking. This film, and I talked about it before when I talked about, I believe it was Spaceman with Adam Sandler. I said, it's got a very unique look. It's what modern film, probably if film adapted with the way cameras have gone, our films would look like that. But instead, we hold our cameras back to look like older cameras.
We've been trying to emulate physical film for the last 20 years.
Yeah. So what this film did differently is that it didn't go so far and above. It's still your 24 frames. It's nothing funny like that. It still looks very cinematic. But what they've done is, I don't think it's a complete removal of film grain, but it's definitely lesser to an extent. And they've let the clarity of the camera shine right through.
I'm just taking a look at some stills, and it is a really nice looking movie.
Yes, it's gorgeously clear.
Especially in the dark scenes, which I feel like are often mudded out or trying to look like the characters are still very clearly, they're well lit within their scene, but the environment around them looks dark in these stills, which, okay, it's dark, but I'm not losing any clarity here, which is a mistake a lot of films make.
Yeah, and they did this thing with telescopes, where the two characters are kind of like watching each other almost, because they're bored, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, usually in a film, it'd be like, oh, okay, you know, you get a blurry, vague image, and it's like, oh, okay. But they were using this as a storytelling element. And I like that they didn't try to be like, okay, you know, we're going to make it really look like a telescope. No, we got our clear image of what we were supposed to be seeing. You're not, for realism purposes, yes, it doesn't look like you're looking through a telescope. But it's clear for viewing, like, as an audience. It's what you'd expect to see from a movie. You don't want, why do we watch things that are blurry or unclear? You know, we don't want that when we're watching a movie, unless it's for storytelling purposes. But most of the times it's not. People are just like, oh, let's do it because we can. We can make it look more realistic.
Yeah. I think that's the... You're right. That's the failing, is realism in place of a storytelling device. There are ways to do it by putting you in the perspective of a character. I feel like for a sound design purpose, I tend to think of, oh, you know, when somebody gets like an explosion next to them, oh, their ears ringing, the camera's shaking, it's maybe a little bit blurry. Okay, you know, these are signals we've developed to show disorientation. But if you're doing that kind of thing, just because that's not necessarily a realistic depiction of that, but it's the best representation we have. But when it comes to stuff like, oh, I'm just looking across the gorge, I don't necessarily need to see it like I'm looking through an eyeglass.
Yeah.
I know what I'm looking at.
Exactly. They gave us enough to be like, okay, you've got your circle, your reduction of your viewing image, but still giving us that crystal clarity we were expecting from this movie as it's going on.
Yeah.
And the chemistry between the two characters was excellent. It really sold the story. That really held the plot together, was the fact that you cared about the two characters. Otherwise, the plot isn't the meatiest thing you're going to go into. It's not anything super special. But it was a good movie to watch, just because, like, plot is not the only thing to movies. It's the whole experience as a package, and that's why I would say this is better than just like a mid-tier garbage.
It's a visual medium, and if you're watching with the sound off, you ought to be able to have some sort of visual storytelling experience. Of course, sound and music and dialogue are a large part of what makes movies work, but at the end of the day, I think back to silent film, and those were a lot more globally popular because the dialogue wasn't really a part of it. You can still watch Charlie Chaplin today, and it's still funny because the dialogue is, okay, well, you can switch that out on the title cards when they come up, but it's still just, it's funny because you're, like, what you're watching is timeless. And that's what actors are doing, and visual storytelling through camera lens choices and framings and color palettes and subtextual acting through body language and stray glances. There's a lot to appreciate just watching a movie. There are so many elements, lighting, obviously, that one's pretty obvious. But there are so many elements to appreciate just while watching a movie. And I feel like over-reliance on plot and dialogue in a lot of entertainment lets filmmakers get lazy about what choices they're making behind the camera. People can say, oh, well, you know, I like the story and the plot and the dialogue, so I didn't really care how it looked, as if that's not a very integral part of the filmmaking craft. And then there's other ones that look beautiful and lack substance.
Honestly, I think besides, that's one of my main critiques with it, was that the beginning and end of the mystery were both basically lore dumps.
Mm.
But excluding those two pieces, if you were to hear lore dump number one of the intro and lore dump of the end, you could watch this movie with the sound off. You would know exactly what's going on. It's very visual storytelling. It's very well done that way.
So do you want to give your final ranking just for the non-spoiler people, and then we'll get into spoilers?
I give it a thumbs up. I say it's good.
Okay.
I say it's good. That's the highest I go now, but...
Yeah. So now we're getting into spoilers. What's in the gorge?
What's in the gorge?
Tell me.
Okay, so...
Tell me now.
Well, the way things pick up is Levi crosses the gorge. Yeah. He's resourceful. He's like, they start talking to each other across the gorge by drawing things out and spying on each other. They're kind of starting some chemistry. And he's like, oh, can I come over? She's like, sure. So he finds a way to get across the gorge with this big zip line he does. And this gorge is massive. And we've seen at this point, they've had to shoot the odd thing in the gorge. These, like, sort of plant creatures. But it was very vague up to this point. But he crosses the gorge. And they have this whole scene. It's a bit romantic. And they dance together. And this was a really cool piece of camera work that they did for this dance scene. I was really impressed with specifically that scene's camera work. It just, something about it really, really worked for me. I was just like, all right, this is great. I don't know. It just really stood out to me. What happens is when he crosses back, it doesn't go as well as the first time, which leads them both to end up in the gorge where all of these monsters live. And this is where I get into the CGI rant, where famously I'm not a fan of modern CGI.
Overly realistic CGI.
It's realistic to the point that you can't even tell it's CGI, and then you can't tell the difference between practical and CGI. The CGI in this film, these like, they're like plant people monster things. And
Wikipedia calls them the Hollow Men.
The Hollow Men, that's what they're called. Yeah, that's right. And you look at them, you know for a fact it's CGI. Maybe there's a few parts that might be practical, but I seriously doubt it. It's distinctly CGI. Does it accomplish what it's supposed to be doing? Yes. Does it look good to look at? Yes. They created a couple really interesting designs with some of the different creatures they run into in the gorge and different problems they come across. It's real enough looking that you're like, okay, it doesn't really take you out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're looking at it, you know for a fact it's CGI.
I see.
And there's no mistake about it. But what it does is it makes sure that, you know, there's a reason we're using CGI for this. These designs are pleasing to look at, or displeasing on purpose.
Yeah. Which is still pleasing.
It's accomplishing a purpose. It's not just outright, you know, we're just using CGI for CGI. No. Could they have done it practically? Yes. Did they have to? No, probably not.
Probably would have required a lot of stop motion work or something crazy like that.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's some more CGI put into, like, the towers themselves. I don't think that was a practical set.
It might have been a model. I haven't seen it.
But it might have been a model. It looks a lot better than the rest of the CGI. I know that. So yeah, you could be right. It could be a model and then some sets, because you only rarely see the towers in far away shots and the base and the top.
Yeah.
And those are like set pieces essentially. And they're identical. So be easy to build one base set piece and one top set piece and film them both. And
yeah,
I would guess that's a model, but the CGI of the characters actually, it has a purpose, but it doesn't overextend itself to be like, yeah, this is super realistic looking. And I like that. That's the way I think CGI should be. You should be able to tell what is CGI and what isn't.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's, personally, it's situational. There are times when I'd like to have my immersion intact. I don't necessarily want, like, in the middle of an action scene or something, I don't necessarily want stray little details catching my attention. Like, oh, I don't know, Ryan always had this problem about, like, blood dripping down the screen or whatever on the camera lenses, and I always hated that too. I just remember that example. But don't throw CGI in my face like that. at random times. It breaks the immersion. Just give me like a good blood squib or spatter when somebody's getting shot or something. I like that can be realistic CGI. I don't care. I think where CGI you're talking about comes best into play is when you're trying to create a sense of otherness where this cannot possibly exist in our world, or we know reasonably confident that it doesn't. And the fact that it is not a practical thing, the fact that it's computer generated, gives it this sense of artificiality, which puts us into the perspective of characters who are witnessing something unnatural, both in the movie and to the audience. And I think that's where what you're talking about best comes into play, is when you're trying to make it seem unnatural to the characters. So to me, that's where I draw the line. There are some things in movie that are meant to feel unnatural and other things that are supposed to be seamless, and we needed to use that as a crutch or we couldn't do it practical. You're not supposed to question that.
Yeah.
We just did that. And that should be as realistic as they've been doing for the last decade.
But I think that's the thing, is when you're going to have creatures, just, you don't need to make them that realistic. Just do them. Don't do them so fancy that you're like, is that practical? Because what it does is it throws your whole movie into a mess of, well, I don't know what's practical, right?
Yeah. We've had multiple movies you and I have watched where we both say, oh, well, you know, that would have been a cooler stunt if it was practical. Wait, it was? What? That was a real stunt?
Like the one from the Batman with the glide. I couldn't believe that. I saw that and I was like, that was a stunt?
Where he's flying down the glider into Gotham, and then he crashes into the car and rolls across the street.
I was like, that was a real, like, not the glide part, but the landing was a real stunt. I was like, holy, it looked fake in the movie, but it looked fantastic. I was like, holy cow. I couldn't believe that.
When you look at the behind the scenes shots, that was a real stunt. But because the rest of the movie's got a lot of CGI in it and it looked kind of fake in the moment, you say, oh, well, that's just a...
Yeah, it wasn't anything surprising.
CGI body double, I guess.
And I think that takes something away from movies, when the overusage of CGI. So that's why this one, I also compared it to Spaceman. Like, Adam Sandler did kind of the same thing with the giant spider, where you looked at it, you knew it was CGI, but it accomplished what it was there to do, and it wasn't so fake that it drew you out of the movie.
Yeah.
And that's why I said at the time, I didn't say at the time that should be the industry standard going forward, because that would be hard to adapt to for Spaceman, because it's so jarring of a difference. This is the movie that I watched that I went, this is what modern movies should be aiming for. That clarity. And I think that's the part, is that clarity, and that clarity adds to the CGI not 100% blending, I think. I think that's part of the trick behind it. Because the Spaceman with Adam Sandler did the same thing. It was really clear, but it went above and beyond and had, I don't even know exactly what they did. It just looks not as cinematic.
You know, I feel like I'm just tying this back to stuff I've been seeing recently, but I talked about the ILM season 2 documentary, and that reminds me sort of a George Lucas way of thinking about stuff, is why are we still trying to live in the mid 20th century in terms of filmmaking? We have new tools, we have new solutions for problems that if you asked somebody 100 years ago if they'd want to film with a clear film, as good a quality as modern digital cameras can do, they probably would have said, heck yeah, we're just using this technology because it's the only thing we've got. We had a very similar discussion in as yet unreleased, or maybe post-released, I don't know, it's in the flux, but in our audio drama discussion, where we were saying about how the audio medium 100 years ago, they didn't have television or color. So they filmed in black and white because that's the only thing they had to do. As soon as color came around, boom, black and white ceased to be the norm. And I think digital filmmaking is a weird example because for some reason they still clung on to it. That film grain aesthetic instead of moving on. It wasn't as clean a break for some reason.
Well, and I don't understand too is, you know, I'm on all these forums for people with cinema cameras and they're like, oh yeah, you want to avoid doing this, dial down the clarity. And you're like, why? Why don't you want your image to be clear? Why wouldn't you want your image to be sharp and clear looking? Why do we forcibly make things blurrier? Right?
Yeah.
Like film grain is one thing, but the sharpness, that's the part I don't get. We have nice sharp camera equipment and this movie pulls it off. If you watch this movie, the average viewer isn't going to sit there and go, well, this looks way clearer than a lot of movies. No, they're going to watch it and they're going to be like, yeah, that movie looked really good.
Okay. Now, correct me if I'm wrong here. You know more about cameras than I do. But is the lack of clarity maybe an attempt to emulate the human eye better? I feel like, don't cameras capture picture at a... like, the pixel rate on a camera is better than the human eye, isn't it? I'm talking, like, in a 4K, in 8K, you can't even notice the difference in 4K anymore. Like, once you're getting up to that level of clarity, the human eye can't even distinguish anymore.
I believe that's the theory. But I don't think that's why they do it for film.
So that blur is just a stylistic element. It's not some attempt to replicate, oh, human eye is a little bit blurrier, so it's more immersive in a way.
I think it's in the same vein of like, oh, we drop it down to 24 frames, so it's not similar to the human eye. It's 24 frames is below what we see through our eyes. And mm-hmm. it's to kind of give it that sense of unreality in a way, and I believe that's the same thing with the clarity, but to be honest, I think the clarity is more of a relic of the past, because to me this movie was incredibly good looking, and I don't think the average audience member would look at this movie and notice anything particularly different. They would just come out of it thinking, oh, that was a really good looking movie. And I think that's a statement of sticklers to the old way of filmmaking.
Heck, even when it comes to clarity, I don't want to necessarily throw all old films under the bus, because I feel like when I've seen, you know, the 60, 70 year old films remastered with their, you know, bringing up the original film stock up to 4K, I'm talking, you know, 70 millimeter epics. I'm talking stuff like Ben-Hur, Lawrence of Arabia, those kind of, like, when you are watching those movies restored, they're just as clear as anything today. When I think of stuff that's unclear, I tend to think more late 80s, 90s stuff. It was starting to get into this kind of even more hazy, dreamlike sort of look, especially in period piece dramas, like lots of, or, you know, we're starting to get in like the era of VHS and DVDs where people got used to seeing like non-high definition, standard definition television or movies playing on TV. We as a culture, besides seeing movies in theaters, got really used to seeing movies in kind of this unclear formatting.
I believe that was because of the creation of cheaper and smaller form film stock.
Super 8s and...
Yeah, as you go on, the film stock becomes smaller.
Yeah.
And the bigger versions become more premium. Like even today, IMAX is your premium film stock that's really expensive.
We've only got one movie theater in our entire area that shows 70 millimeter IMAX.
Yeah.
That's like, what is it, the only one in Ontario, or is it?
I think there's one more.
One more?
I think there's two.
Yeah, and they're both down in Toronto, yeah. Right? Yeah. So that's 20 minutes away from us, and that's as far as that's the only way to see 70 millimeter IMAX in our area.
But that's the thing is, yeah, that unclarity came from smaller, like making films cheaper on a lower budget, and more films were coming out than ever, and cheaper film stock was available, and the quality of viewing wasn't high enough anyways to really notice. So now when we're doing the restorations, it's like you could only go so far, because you know the ones that were done on good film stock, if they still have a clean copy of it, you know, there's a reason actual film is still technically the best way to record, is because it, as far as I understand, it theoretically does not have a resolution limit per se.
You're just capturing a snapshot of reality as is. There's no amount of pixels or information lost. It just is.
Yeah.
There.
It's just to the extent of what the film stock can actually,
the bigger the film,
essentially.
Yeah, the bigger your film stock, the bigger the detail you're capturing on it. Like, I think maybe I'm wrong on this, but technically it would be there on the smaller stuff. It's just the stock is so small you can't see the details.
Well, light can only
imprint so much.
So much on a small area. But that's why
The
resolution can be upped, you know, with good film stock, could be upped a lot higher than was ever intended, because it was capturing on a better way. Where we now are, everything's based on sensors with how many pixels they can pick up.
Yeah. So as for the story of the Gorge, was it mostly a romance slash action driven venture?
The romance really put the two characters together to make you feel more of their connection when it goes downhill and Levi falls into the gorge, Draza goes after him, and they're trying to find the way out of this gorge, and along the way they run into a whole bunch of different problems, and you know,
yeah,
and they're not intentionally, but they find out the secret behind the gorge and everything that goes on. But it mainly, after the romance piece and this mystery of the gorge, once you're in the gorge is where it kind of, after a certain degree, is where it kind of slowed down, because it just went into exposition of what was actually going on. And that was maybe a little bit disappointing for me, but I mean, it was more like, okay, we found the secret lab and let's read some documents. Oh, okay, this, and cliche, oh, what's this film projector? And
I see.
You watch the scientist, and it was just kind of cliche. It's fine. It was serviceable enough. I don't know. I feel like the ending was the weakest point in the movie. Because the beginning was great, because it just cut right to the point. It really set things up really well. The ending just kind of fell a little bit flat, but I still had a good time watching the movie.
Sure.
Especially when things are in the gorge, it goes back to that camera work, and also the colors. Depending on where they went in the gorge, the smoke and the fog and everything, it would be a totally different color palette. And that played into the type of creatures they kind of encountered and kind of how the scene would go. There's scenes that are distinctly blue, scenes that are distinctly green, scenes that are distinctly red. Like,
yeah.
And I watched this a couple weeks ago, so I can't quite place and be like, oh, this was red for this reason, and this was blue for that reason. But it made it interesting to watch. I'm sure the color had some purpose. I just can't remember at this point. But it made the gorge feel unique throughout, and really told you that, hey, you've moved from one area to another, where it'd be really easy to, you know, make the movie long and drawn out to show that you've moved a section through the gorge. But using the colors was a pretty easy way to be like, hey, we're we're cutting ahead without really showing all this walking or all this travel or whatever's going on here.
Reminds me of Mad Max Fury Road. It did a very similar thing where different sections were segmented by the color palettes.
Yeah, they kind of did the same thing.
Yeah, so thumbs up.
Overall, yeah, it was a thumbs up. It's pretty good. I would recommend watching it if you're a film enthusiast, just to kind of look at what probably should be the modern take on what cinema should probably look like.
I'm just so on the fence because I don't want to get Apple TV Plus. It's just another streaming service. But I keep hearing all these good shows and movies they're doing lately. And a lot of the stuff that I actually kind of want to see is on Apple TV Plus. I feel like I'll just get it at some point and binge a lot of the best stuff.
Just rotate services. It's the best way to do it.
Yeah, maybe. I'm stubborn, though.
I mean, I can't say anything because I'm mooching right now, but...
Yeah, I'm stubborn and anti-Apple in general, but...
I don't know. For the first thing I've watched on Apple TV, I was pretty impressed with it. Overall, for it being like, oh yeah, it's an Apple original. All right, let's see how this goes. I was very impressed. I don't know. I'm going to watch some more stuff on there and see what else, but...
Check back in for those at some point.
Yeah.
So where can we find you?
You can find me on Instagram at jchurchtpm.
And you can find me on Instagram at ThoughtPlane Media. And check out ThoughtPlane.ca for everything else we do. There's hundreds of posts there for free. And you can donate a buck or two there if you like our work and you're feeling generous. We hope to see you on the next close-up with Ryan and Joe. Till next time.
Take care.